So good afternoon. Today is January 8th, 2016, and we are here in our hall with Justice Lu. Welcome. She's going to tell us about her life and her career.
I think I'd be more comfortable if you called me Linda Lu.
Oh, sure, okay. We can do that, Linda Lu. So, Linda Lu, tell us about your background.
I was born in Vancouver in 1947. So that makes me 69 this year. And I grew up on the east side of Vancouver at 7th and Fraser until 1958, when we moved to the west side of Vancouver. And it's hard for people to believe, but there were very few Chinese people in Vancouver at that time. And there was a petition going around wanting us not to live there because there was concern that the Chinese moving into the neighborhood would lower their property values, and now the complaint, of course, is the opposite. My father comes from China, and he was born in feudal China under the reign of the last emperor. My grandmother had bound feet, and my mother was born in Vancouver's Chinatown.
Okay. And where did you go to school?
I first went to Mount Pleasant Elementary School. And then in grade six, we moved and I went to Trafalgar Elementary School and then Point Grey for 1 year before Prince of Wales was built.
Mm-hmm. And what about your undergraduate training?
I had a bit of time making up my mind. I think I started in psychology, then moved to English, and then finished in anthropology and psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what took me a long time was learning how to play pool and how to play chess.
Okay. So how did you arrive at studying law?
It's not a story that bears repeating. I always wanted to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And had the Hippocratic Oath memorized by the time I was 12. But I can't do science and I can't do math very well. And those were the hippie days in the early 70s, the late 60s, early 70s. And we were sitting around one night talking and someone suggested law school because I was just finishing my undergraduate school. So I took a little detour on my way to school because in those days you used to hitchhike. And I filled out some papers and was told to write the LSAT. It was the first year of the LSAT, but it didn't count.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a notice that I was accepted into law school.
Okay. And when was that? Which year?
1971.
1971. Okay. So what were your impressions of the law school back in 1971?
When I look back on impressions, I was extremely shy.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to, and there were mostly men, and our classrooms were in the old army huts, and people would smoke. And I learned how to drink beer, and everyone studied a lot.
Okay.
And people studied a lot because you weren't willing to go out to socialize until after you finished studying at about 10 o'clock at night.
Okay. So do you remember about your law school curriculum? What kind of courses?
I remember Eric Todd, property.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone tried to cram into the back of the class because then he wouldn't ask you questions, so he wasn't supposed to ask you questions. I remember Charlie Bourne. I remember him teaching us about about international law and who owned the sea, and I enjoyed him even though some people said it was like a talking cadaver, I thought it was great. And there was Jus Blom in tax, Jerome Atkins in torts, Diebold, and even Peter Liesk. I remember most of them.
So when did you graduate?
1974.
1974. And what happened then, after you graduated?
That was a time when there were not very many women in the law firms. Many of the major law firms didn't hire women. And the number of Chinese lawyers, I think you could count on one hand. And most of them practiced, if not all of them, in Chinatown. So it was hard to get a job. It was hard to get articles.
Okay. So what did you do?
I applied for EI, unemployment insurance. But before I collected my first EI check, I'd waited on tables all through law school. And it was through waiting on tables that one of the people that showed up there every Friday night, a lawyer, he called his old friend, and that's how I got my articles.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at BC Hydro.
At BC Hydro, okay. And how long did you work there?
12 years, from 1974 until 1986.
Okay. So after BC Hydro?
Then I went to Singleton Urquhart from 1986 to 1996.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly 11 years. And then I went to the bench in 1996.
So tell us about your experience at the bench.
I want to tell you my experience about law first, the practice of law.
Okay.
I want to tell you a bit more about the law school.
Sure.
Because I hitchhiked all over the place. Because in those days, there used to be hitchhiking posts along. If you were going downtown or to North Vancouver, to West Vancouver, you just stood by the post that you wanted. And so that's how I got around. And you didn't need to learn how to drive. And it was only after I became a lawyer, it wasn't kind of conduct becoming to have your lawyer hitchhiking your way to a meeting. So I decided I needed to learn how to drive. So then I got my driver's license.
Okay.
Just things are different.
Mm-hmm.
Because I noticed like people do not hitchhike anymore. You want to know about what it's like judging, or do you want to know what the practice of law is like back then?
I want to know about both, so whatever you prefer first.
The practice of law is difficult. I'm sure you've heard it. And I found it very hard, but I found it very challenging because I decided to be a litigator because it's this thing that scared me the most.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't be frightened of anything. I admire the young people that go into law. It's not easy because the law school doesn't, or it didn't when I went, it doesn't really teach you about the business of law or how you even develop a client to practice. Now to the bench, is that where you want me?
Sure.
We'll just skip ahead 23 years. I really enjoy it. You learn. I feel very privileged to have the job. I feel very privileged to be able to. I consider it a service that you try to help people. And I don't think it's the best system, going to court. But it's a system that we have. You learn something from every case that you hear. And you're always impressed by what a privileged life you have when you hear about the lives of other people. But access to justice is a huge issue. We're seeing a lot of in-person litigants now. And I've heard some judges back east it's very rare in a family case to even have lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another story, and I don't know how we're going to fix it.
So can you tell us what are the changes in the profession you have noticed throughout your career?
The changes?
Yeah.
There's more women,
mm-hmm.
of course. There's more women. There's a lot more color. The profession is no longer white as it was when I came out. It sounds like you're coming out of prison, doesn't it? When I came out in 1974, I think the presence of women, and I haven't heard anybody else said it, has made it a little gentler, although some women might disagree with me. Because since then, since I've come out, we now have arbitration and mediation. Rather than trying to kill the other side, at least you try to meet halfway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's gentler in that way. But it hasn't changed in that women tend not to stay.
Okay. So can you describe for us any notable colleagues that you have had?
Oh, I like to think I've had lots. Maybe I'll tell it this way. Two of my best friends from law school are Mr. Justice Burnett and Mr. Justice Metzger, who was the chief judge of this court. And I was in court just a few weeks ago when someone was referring some case law to me. And the first case was a case from Justice Burnett, and the next case was from Mr. Justice Metzger. And I almost had tears in my eyes when I was on the bench because I couldn't help but to think back when we were such poor students. And so that's what I found wonderful about law school and staying here and growing up with my friends. There was a time when we were still hitchhiking all over the place, and now we drive these fancy cars. We don't have to... It just seems like the other day when we wanted to go away, we had to sleep in the car. And it's just nice to grow up and grow old together.
Mm-hmm.
I think at least half of the women I was in law school with have gone to the bench because it wasn't that big a pool to pick from.
Mm-hmm. So can we go back to the law school? I think we're going to jump all the way back because you mentioned army huts, which I found interesting. Can you describe for us how the facilities looked like when you started?
There was a building, I think where I'm sitting now in this building, it housed the library. And it housed the library, and it housed the administration and support staff, and I think the professors each had a little office there. But otherwise, the classes themselves were in these army huts outside. And then sometimes I had to march across campus to another building where the class was held. But these army huts, they were from when the law school was first here in 1945. I think they were supposed to be temporary, but 25, 30 years later, they're still there. So they were mostly flat huts, and they were so dilapidated that in the wintertime, the clanking of the radiator was very loud. And I remember writing one exam in the wintertime with the window open because the heat was uncontrollable. The snow is coming in, landing on your exam paper, and that radiator is still cranking away. And you had to watch to make sure that the chair you got was stable enough to support you, because
mm-hmm.
at times some big fat student would sit on a chair and the leg would break away. So that was the hut. And then there was another hut, but when you walked into the bottom part, it had risers like stairs going. How do you explain? It was like a stadium, or it was a. It's like seats in a theater. That's what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, I'd be sitting there rolling my cigarettes, rolling my own cigarette, and everyone would smoke away. But when you look back, you know, it kind of pulled you together.
So you were smoking during classes?
Everyone smoked in classes.
Including professors?
Yeah, everyone smoked. I don't remember the professor smoking, but smoking was allowed in classes. This smoke-free stuff. Remember, I went to law school before the charter, before equality, and before smoking became a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone smoked. You know, as they say, everyone would be smoking in the car with the windows rolled up and you could hardly breathe. And they smoked on planes. It's hard for you to believe, isn't it? It just seems so... This is before seatbelt legislation came in. So it was different.
Mm-hmm. And how big were the classes? How many people?
I don't recall.
No?
No, you must know. How big were the classes?
They were small.
Yeah, I don't remember. But I know everybody in my class. Like, there was Rick Peck, who was on the front page of The Advocate at one time. There were a lot of, there was Madam Justice Newbery. We're all kind of different back then than we are now. Not the same.
So you stayed in touch with a lot of students that
you
went. Great. So would you say it was a difficult experience to study law, or was it a difficult school to go to?
That's an interesting question. I don't know what you mean by difficult. You had to study.
Mm-hmm.
You studied, and you wondered what your marks were going to be like. But I think I learned more after I got out. But I enjoyed the experience. What do other people say?
It's really individual.
Is it?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I think I always wanted to take care of all of the... They were the boys in my class. It's kind of a maternal kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to make sure that they were okay.
So have you ever considered an academic career in law, teaching law?
No.
Why not?
I'm not a good teacher.
Okay.
I don't think I'm a... No, I don't... I'm not a good teacher. I think I'm too impatient.
So have you had any dealings with the law school after you graduated?
No, I don't think I have. Other than planning our reunion. But no, I haven't. But I would, but no one's asked. I don't know on what occasion that you could do that. No one said, would you come and teach a class, or would you come and talk to a student? There never was any of that. But that's not to say you don't mentor or help someone when you see someone.
Mm-hmm.
That someone that needs help. I was just at a party before Christmas when I met a young lawyer from one of the big firms downtown, and I could tell that she was having a hard time, so I spent half an hour talking to her.
And she was a student here?
Yes.
Okay.
They need help, because what happens here is fairly insular compared to what happens out there.
So would you like to share whatever you told her with students who might be listening to this? Because there's a lot of students who will be listening to these interviews.
Oh my.
What would be your advice to law students?
I'll just say this, she is fairly tall. And she said men were afraid of her because she was so tall. I said, use what you've got. Use it to your advantage. And she was concerned that the profession wasn't kind, because they were only interested in the numbers and what you produce. And I said that you can't change that, really. And I encouraged her to, I'm paraphrasing it now, but I encouraged her because I told her I still see the law as a helping profession. And she's told me about her friends who have quit after a couple of years. I told her what I tell all my students. You won't like it for the first 5 years. For the first 5 years, you will either think, maybe I should go to graduate school and get my PhD or master's degree, or maybe I should go back to waiting on tables because I like that more. And you will think of all the reasons why you should quit because it's so difficult. But I say, stick it. You even feel like jumping out the window sometimes. It's so depressing. And you can't even share that angst with someone. And you learn not to share that angst with anyone at the firm because it will get back to you. But stick it out. And one day, usually after 5 years, you'll finally realize you've had a day where you actually knew what you were doing and that you actually kind of liked it. But most of the not liking it is because you don't know what you're doing and it's so competitive. But generally, if you like what you're doing, if you enjoy it, then the competition is okay. It's like if you know how to run, if you like to run, or if you like to lift weights, or if anything that you're good at, then the competition isn't so bad. But I say, give it 5 years. And I also told her, you almost owe it to women to stick it out in some ways. Because if all the women keep dropping out, I don't know how it's going to help. I recognize that the practice of law isn't conducive to having a balanced life or having a family. And it is a big struggle. But there's always other areas of law other than working in a big law firm. And law is interesting. Law moves, law changes, and you can't live your life without being affected by law in one way or another.
So you never regretted going to law school?
Ah, there are days I've been on my feet in the courtroom trying to argue, thinking, why didn't I go into home ec? Lots of days like that. But that's only normal, isn't it? But I really believe that you can like anything if you put your mind to it.
Mm-hmm.
You can like anything. Just don't keep looking for all the negative things.
So can you recommend for us any of your colleagues for more of these history interviews about the law school or about the legal profession in BC?
Well, how did you get my name?
How did we get the name?
Why don't you try Justice Burnett?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you try Justice Burnett?
Okay.
He'll talk.
Sure.
This is like a confession room, isn't it?
Yeah.
He'll talk. And Justice Mary Newberry.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen Nordlinger.
Okay.
Maria Giardini. She's Judge Maria Giardini. I've just given you my dinner group. And I don't know if she'd speak to you. She might. Her mother just passed away, but it's Rosemary. That's R-O-S. Rosemary. R-O-S-E-M-A-R-I-E. One word.
Okay.
Words check. She W-E-R-T-S-C-H-E-K. She was at McCarthy's. She's supposed to be retired. And I mention her because she's one of the more successful, when I mean financially successful, lawyers, because she did well at tax, and I think she even worked for a chartered accounting firm. And she, like, I think she's like Justice Newberry. I think they both got their master's degree in England.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us what is next in store for you? What are your plans?
I'm thinking of retiring.
Okay.
Because I have to go at 74. But I'll tell you, my friends and I talk about it. None of us... Oh, you can try Mary Ellen Boyd, too.
Mm-hmm.
She's in my little dinner group. And she was a judge. And she's now mediating, arbitrating.
Okay.
What was your question again? This is what happens when you get older, why I should be quitting.
What's next in store for
you? Oh, I think the women are going to have the same problem as the men, because work has been everything. We're used to working huge hours and working all the time. I'm now supernumerary, so I don't work every weekend. And it's hard for us to... What are we going to do next? They're going to kick us out the door. So we're learning how to play golf. I've signed up for swimming lessons, but I canceled. So I can at least swim and play golf.
So what would you say is the biggest achievement of your career?
Oh, I think the biggest, it's not a case. It's watching my father when I had my swearing-in ceremony as a judge for a little old Chinese man who would be over 100 years old now to come to Canada and not have the right to vote, and having been brought up under an emperor in China and never thinking he could own a car to see his daughter, I think that was my proudest moment.
Great.
I'm gonna cry.
Great. Well, I think on that note, it's a perfect place to...
Turn it off.
Turn it off. Thank you for being with us.
I am gonna cry.
Yeah.